Welcome, everybody, to the Roll Skis podcast, UConn's home for all sports talk. I'm your host, Liam O'Keefe, and this is it, the very first episode of the Roll Skis podcast. I'm incredibly excited to be here, and let me explain to you guys what this is all about. The Roll Skis podcast is a podcast hosted by me, where every week we're going to be talking about the biggest storylines in professional sports, as well as taking a look at what's going on in the sports right here in Storrs, Connecticut at UConn. Today's episode is all going to be about football. That's the main talk of sports these days. We're going to look at the three local teams, the Jets, Giants, and Patriots, and see how their weekends went. We're going to look at the Rams and the Packers because they had some pretty crazy endings. And then we're going to look at two insane blowouts, in my opinion, in the Panthers and the Bears winning both of their games. And then we're going to end the podcast off by looking at UConn football, seeing how they've looked the past 4 weeks. They sit at 2-2, but what's the real story behind that record? Starting us off in the world of professional sports, we're going to be looking at the three home teams, I guess you could call them, for Connecticut, the two New York teams, as well as the New England Patriots. We will start with the New England Patriots, my favorite team, and they took a loss 21-14 to the Pittsburgh Steelers at home. This was a brutal game. The Patriots committed 5 turnovers. You can't do that if you want to win a football game. You know, you can't have the turnover margin be so significant because they actually outplayed the Steelers. If you check the yards and you check the efficiency numbers, the Patriots played the better game in almost every stat except the main one that matters. Aaron Rodgers did not look very, you know, vintage Aaron Rodgers. That's been his story for the longest time now. He really just needs to hang it up, in my opinion. But he has the Steelers sitting at 2-1, so who am I to judge, truthfully? But New England, they look good. They're an improved team. You can't doubt that. Despite their 1-2 record, they have been playing a decent brand of football. They've been doing the small things and hurting themselves, which has really been painful. 5 turnovers, obviously. Ramondre Stevenson, their starting running back, 2 fumbles, one of them in the end zone. You can't turn scoring plays into positive plays for the other team. Antonio Gibson had a fumble as well, and Drake May had an interception and a fumble. Just a horrific showing. No ball security at all. You can't do that. I've already harped on it. That's just bad football. Mike Vrabel and the other coaches in that room, I'm sure, are harping on this as we speak, but it was still a close game despite everything. They played them incredibly close. They only lost by 7 and had a -5 turnover differential. You take that as a partial win. There are positives in that stat. Looking at the team as a whole through 3 weeks, they're sitting at 1-2, but I think they've made massive strides in their offense. Stephon Diggs is not who they paid him to be just yet, but he's also 8 months removed from an ACL tear. The fact that he's even out there is great in my opinion, but the rest of the offense around him doesn't look fantastic. DeMario Douglas has been a complete non-factor. Another story of the Steelers-Patriots game was 4th-and-1 inside the 2-minute drill. It's, you know, they go past, Drake hits DeMario Douglas on the line. All he needs to do is lunge forward and they continue with their drive. Instead, he goes east and west. He tries to loop around to get more yards, and he gets tackled behind the line. Painful, painful watch. It's the stuff like that, it comes down to coaching and experience. If you can't do that, you shouldn't be on the field. They have better wide receivers. Kyle Williams, a rookie. Efton Chisholm, who people have been dying to see in New England. Both behind you. If you keep making plays like that, his time in the league is numbered, especially on the New England Patriots. But the defense has looked solid despite missing Christian Gonzalez. He practiced for the first time that last week since June 28th, I believe, and they need him out there. Carlton Davis is a fine corner too, but when you have Alex Austin out there or Marcus Jones on the outside, it really gets ugly. They're freeing up many, many more plays for the offense than they should with a healthy Gonzalez. So I'm interested to see when he comes back, if he makes his debut this week against the Panthers. That would be incredibly helpful for them. Then looking at Drake May, I thought he's been pretty good. There were a lot of uncertainties about him. His last year his rookie year. He looked good, but he definitely had some things he needed to work through, and I think he's done a pretty good job working through them. I've got some stats up here. Through 3 weeks, Drake May is fifth in passing yards, tied for seventh in passing touchdowns, and third in completion percentage. Those were things that we needed to see change from. He didn't have the best completion percentage last year, and the offense didn't create many explosives. So I'm glad to see in this new Josh McDaniels-led offense that the passing game has more rhythm to it. Something I am concerned about, however, is the running game. It's looked pretty weak. Last week against the Steelers, Drake May led the team in rushing yards, and he's a good rushing threat. I really, really like his ability to get out and create and make plays with his legs. But you pay three guys a lot of money to run the football, and none of them have looked good yet. Obviously, we talked about the fumbling in the game against Pittsburgh, and that's led a lot of people to claim Travion Henderson should be the starter. He should be the running back one. But he actually had more snaps on the field than Ramondre Stevenson did in the entire game, and he didn't look great either. That's the issue, is that when we've seen Travion Henderson, he hasn't been producing. He's got a couple flags in pass protection, which was a strength of his in college. And when he runs the football, he's not creating the explosives that everyone's expecting him to. He is a very talented back, and I believe he can reach those heights, but he hasn't done that yet. So I'm confused why people are trying to slander the offensive coaching staff for not having him out there when, in the limited time we've seen him, he hasn't looked fantastic. I really haven't had a lot of confidence in any of the running backs so far. Stevenson had a great game against Miami, but that's just one game. In Vegas, they didn't really show up, and then against Pittsburgh, they didn't show up either. So I'd really, really like to see some change happen in this running back room quick. And this isn't an offensive line thing either. I think the offensive line is one of the most improved units in all of football. Drake May has clean pockets all the time now. Will Campbell is looking fantastic. And Garrett Bradbury, the center, who people didn't really give a lot of respect to in free agency, has played fantastic. He's allowed zero pressures, zero hurries, and zero sacks in 3 weeks of football. You can't ask for much more than that. But that's really all I have to say about the New England Patriots. Let's move down to East Rutherford and see how the Jets and Giants did. We'll start with the Jets, who were actually in Tampa this weekend, taking on the Buccaneers, who had those sweet white jerseys on. I know if you were watching that game, you were mesmerized in them. They looked fantastic. I love all the retro jerseys that have been going around. Obviously, Tampa has those white jerseys. They have the creamsicle jerseys. And New England, they were in their red Pat the Patriot uniforms. I think some of those uniforms are just top tier. I love all of them. And it was good to see Tampa Bay get a win in them. But it was really, really close. New York gave them a run for their money. If you didn't watch this game, I'll break down the ending for you right now. The Jets took a lead at the very, very end of the game because of a blocked kick that they ended up returning. But it didn't end up mattering because with very little time left, Baker Mayfield drove the Bucs right down the field for a game-winning field goal. It was insane. Baker Mayfield has been playing out of his mind recently. He has an insane clutch factor. He's been letting the ball fly, and he's been very, very accurate. He is looking like the guy everyone built him to be out of college. Who would have thought, you know, on his fourth team, so many years into the league, he's finally looking like the number one overall pick we all thought he would be. And that's not, you know, Browns Baker Mayfield slander. He looked really good in Cleveland, too. But after that, you know, he took a dip. I know you guys remember Carolina and the Rams games, but shout out Baker Mayfield, man. It's been really, really cool to see him revive his career and take down the Jets. Speaking of the Jets, the offense, I mean, it's kind of a give-me game. It's a pass-up. Justin Fields wasn't playing. He was in the concussion protocol. But Tyrod Taylor didn't look horrible. He had two touchdowns, almost 200 yards. He did have a pick, which, you know, happens. And Tyrod Taylor is a premier backup in this league. My main problem with the Jets, they don't have real weapons. They have Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall, who are two of the best. Breece Hall had an amazing start to the year, and we all know how good Garrett Wilson can be when he's going. But outside of him, it's, you know, Alan Lazard, Ty Johnson, Anaya Smith. Who are these guys? I know who they are, but none of these guys have the capability to be the second option on a contending team. They need a serious, serious threat alongside Garrett Wilson. They tried that last year. They got Devontae Adams, and I really, really liked their process there. But Aaron Rodgers left, Devontae Adams left. It wasn't realistic for them to assume that they could have kept Adams after Rodgers decided he was going to leave. So I don't blame him on that. But there were other options out there. They could have gone out and gotten even Stephon Diggs, who was out forever. Keenan Allen, who looks fantastic right now. Those guys were waiting on free agency, collecting dust. And you could have picked them up, and any of them would have been a better second option for Justin Fields, who really needs all the help he can get. Because I'm not the biggest Justin Fields guy ever. I think he can give you cool running highlights. Sometimes watching him is fun. And then you start looking at his stats and try and watch him throw in rhythm, and you're like, wow, this guy really just doesn't have it. He gets flustered, he holds the ball too long, and I really just don't believe he will ever have a successful career in the NFL. He's made it this long based on aura and rushing moments alone, and it's gotten him this far. Maybe he'll come around and keep doing it, but the Jets are 0-3, and that has a lot to do with them. All right, now it's time to roll over and talk about Big Blue, baby, those New York Giants. God, didn't they look awful on Sunday Night Football against the Chiefs? It was a brutal game from Russell Wilson, who was coming off one of his best games ever as a pro. He had 450 passing yards, a bunch of touchdowns. He looked fantastic against Dallas and then parlayed that into a whole bunch of nothing against the Chiefs. It was insane to watch. He played an atrocious game of football. So his interceptions are the funniest things ever. He throws up a moon ball, and when you're watching it on the broadcast angle, you have no idea what's about to pop up. You just have to trust that the quarterback knows what he's doing, and it pans over, and one of the safeties is like slowing down to not run the ball. And the receiver is totally blanketed, and it's just hilarious trying to watch the receiver adjust and try and reach the football. Russell Wilson has just lost the juice, I guess. This really speaks more to how awful the Cowboys defense is, which we'll talk about in a bit when we get to the Chicago-Dallas game. But Russell Wilson, he's now looked bad against two legit defenses in Kansas City and Washington. And he's just not the guy. And it's such a hard situation for the Giants to be in because the fans want Jackson Dart. You draft a guy in the first round, the fans are going to be clamoring for him, especially when the bridge quarterback is playing like this. I remember just last year when Jacoby Brissett was stinking it up for the New England Patriots. Fans were dying to see Drake May. I was dying to see Drake May. But you also have to understand what the offense looks like greatly affects what the quarterback looks like. If you throw Jackson Dart out there, he's not going to look like a superhero and a legend because the offense is so awful. He may look better than Russell Wilson, I assume he will be, but you have to think about what it means to really put that quarterback in the offense. Andrew Thomas came back last night after being gone for a full year, which is massive for this Giants offense. They needed him back, especially if they want to start Dart ever. Andrew Thomas had to be in the lineup. Without him, their offensive line was atrocious. So it's good to get him back, but I still think they should sit Dart for a couple more weeks just to really let him soak up that knowledge, because the Giants were never going to be contenders, but there was always that media coverage about them and Jackson Dart that made you think that they had a path to something if Dart looked really good. And I would try and shield him from all of that as early as you could be, because seeing him in the limelight, if he doesn't look how the media wants him to look right away, they would slander him, and it could kill his confidence. You never know. I don't know. I've never met him. I can't speak to the confidence of Jackson Dart. But as a young rookie in the New York media, you really need to wait and make sure that Jackson Dart is in the perfect opportunity to start. I would not send him out there next week. They play the Chargers. I would not throw him in against the Chargers team that looks red hot. Justin Herbert is probably the front runner for MVP, if we're being honest. So I would not put him out there against that team. You just got to keep Russ cooking for a little bit more until you're sure that Jackson Dart is ready, because the coaches have already bought themselves some time. They don't need to be, you know, worried about getting fired anymore. You know, Jackson Dart saved them from that for at least one more year. So I would really try and make sure Jackson Dart is as ready as you can be. You have your offensive identity figured out, and the players that you need to be healthy, stay healthy. Keep Andrew Thomas healthy. Malik Nabers took a big hit. Make sure he's okay. You can't trot him out there, and your receiver core is, you know, Sterling Shepard, Wandale Robinson. That would also be disastrous. So I think out of the three teams we've mentioned so far, the Giants are in probably the farthest to compete. The Jets are up there. I definitely think it's New England and then the New York teams, but they're both just fighting to not be awful. I will say, I want to highlight Cam Scataboo. Everybody loves him. Everyone loves him. He gets a lot of attention from the media because of his play at Arizona State. The guy runs hard. He's awesome. I love what he does. 120 yards and a touchdown last night. The only positive thing for the Giants offense was Cam Scataboo. And so you got to give him his flowers. But everyone else really did not have the performance that you would need to see from a competitive team. I think it's probably the Giants at 3, the Jets at 2, because at least they're kind of interesting and they have the main players in place, Garrett Wilson. Their offensive line is actually pretty good. Unfortunately, Elijah Verrett Tucker, him being injured and missing the year is a major loss, but I still think they have a bunch of the core in place, definitely in the front office and the head coach. I'm really big on Aaron Glenn. And then I think New England is the top dog. They've got their franchise quarterback. They've got the star corner. They have the most elite pieces in place, in my opinion, in order to compete. But enough about the three sorry teams in the Northeast. Let's talk about some crazy, exciting football games that happened this weekend, specifically the Rams and the Eagles. What a game. I'm very blessed that I got to follow through with this game, because this one was insane. Originally, the Rams, like, had the Eagles on, like, the ropes. The Eagles couldn't get anything going in the first part of this game. Jalen Hurts, I think, had 17 passing yards for a large majority of the game, and then they finally turned it on. One shot to A.J. Brown changed the entire landscape of the game. A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith finished with incredible stat lines. But the story of this game is how it ended. The Eagles were up 1. The Rams were in field goal range. And then, boom, Jordan Carter and Jordan Davis slammed through the blocking field goal unit, smack down the punt, and take it all the way back to the crib for a touchdown to win the game as time expires. It's beautiful. It was absolutely insane to watch. The Rams had them on the ropes the entire game. If I was Sean McVay, I would be sick to my stomach that they did not win this game, because they played the Eagles perfectly. They did exactly what you were supposed to do, and with that Puka Nacua performance, he was unreal. Puka Nacua is putting up monster numbers. He is going to get some serious respect for Offensive Player of the Year this year if he can just stay healthy, because he's catching like 10 balls a week, it feels like. He is always open. Stafford and his connection is next level. It's, you know, Stafford locks onto his guys. He obviously had Calvin Johnson forever. Then he got to L.A. and it was Cooper Kupp. Now Cooper Kupp's gone. And the Puka Nacua buddy ball is just unreal. It's so hard to be stopped with Stafford's IQ and Puka's physical tools. He played an incredible game. It's unreal to me that the Rams ended up losing this game. And it was through special teams. People want to hate on the impact that special teams has. Here you are with no win because of your special teams. So it's very clearly an important part of the game. We're going to take a moment aside to settle the special teams haters here. And continuing on with special teams, I want to rotate right in to Packers-Browns. If you saw what the Green Bay Packers did to the Lions week 1, and then they followed that up with an insanely dominant game against the Washington Commanders, you would have thought they would beat the Cleveland Browns by 45. Packers, Browns, a historic franchise and a historically sad franchise, that it's just, it felt like a lock to me to have Green Bay win this game. But you can't win a game if you only put up about 10 points. It was, you know, huge props to the Cleveland Brown defense. They looked fantastic. Miles Garrett wrecked the game as always. Carson Schwesinger, UCLA linebacker, the Browns' second-round pick this year, he had a fantastic game. He was a heat-seeking missile for Cleveland this game and was a large reason why they were able to win this game and take down the Green Bay Packers, who everyone the last couple weeks has been saying looked like a juggernaut of a team. But that's not always what happens. You don't always get to be Goliath. Sometimes David ends up winning, and that's what happened in this game. Jordan Love, I thought, still played a pretty fine game of football, but Josh Jacobs, 16 carries, 30 yards. Yeesh, that is ugly. It's not all on him, obviously. You can't blame a running back, but when it's you can't get anything going on the ground, it's hard to play a complete game, especially against a Browns team with a good defensive line. Obviously, most of that is Miles Garrett, but nonetheless, that's still how they play the games. The Green Bay offense couldn't get it going, and then all of a sudden, with 3 minutes left, the Browns offense gets really, really hot. They get a field goal, they turn right around, they get another touchdown. Quinshon Judkins finds the end zone after his big disputes this offseason with legal troubles. His contract wasn't signed until, I think, you know, even in going into week one, he was still unsigned. And then Andre Schmidt had a 55-yard field goal to win the game as time, not as time expired, but with less than 30 seconds remaining. It was clear the game was over at that point, which was just unreal considering the Browns offense still looks horrible. Joe Flacco, he stinks. I really believe they're just biding their time to get to an easier portion of the schedule where they can try out one of Dylan Gabriel or Shedeur Sanders, because there's just no hope with Joe Flacco. He's on pace to throw like an absurd amount of interceptions. He just doesn't take care of the football, and he doesn't offer you anything as a physical athlete, because I bet you he's probably older than my dad at this point. So, you know, Joe Flacco really doesn't have it, but you always got a vintage one in you, I guess. He ended up making a comeback, all the right moments hit, and if you as the Packers can't put up more than 10 points, you don't really deserve to win. So good on the Browns for punishing their weak offense and showing them what it really means to be a true football team. Before we get into UConn football, there are two more games I want to talk about. Panthers, Falcons, and Bears, Cowboys. We'll start with Panthers and Falcons first. Michael Penix Jr. looked horrible this game. I'm going to put this loss almost solely on him, to be honest. He had a noodle of an interception, an absolute stinker. Tried to throw it out to the flat. The corner was just right there, easy to walk it in for six. And he just never looked confident. He didn't throw with any poise. He really let the Panthers defense, of all defenses, get to you. The Panthers defense is not some star-studded unit. They don't have a, you know, plethora of great playmakers. So if you're going to let that defense stop you, you've really, really got to reorganize yourself. Penix showed a lot of his limitations today, I think. He was not a great athlete, and that hurt them at times. He couldn't create out of structure, which is what you really need to be doing in this day and age, and he can't do that. And I think that hurts them a little bit, despite the pretty good supporting cast around him. Obviously, Bijan Robinson is a fantastic running back. Drake London is super underrated. I think he's an absolute beast. And Kyle Pitts, for all the jokes that he has around him because he's a fantasy football bust every single year, there's a reason he has such hype every single season. He is a monster. He's very tall. He's fast. He's an incredible athlete. So even if he doesn't have the most production that everyone thinks or thought he will, he's still a valuable piece to your football team and should definitely be used in a higher capacity than what they have. And for Carolina, good job. 30-0, that's what you needed. They needed a bounce back win. They hadn't looked super hot to start the year, and they ended up turning it around. Bryce Young, he looked really good. Tet McMillan is being incredibly underrated right now. He is playing absolutely fantastic football through the first three games of his career. He has over 200 yards. That's 13th in the league right now. And yes, I do have him on my fantasy team. So that's half the reason I've realized his impact. But they look really, really good. And now I don't want to overrate them much. They only scored 2 offensive touchdowns in a 30-0 win. So they still have lots of improvement to make. And if you had to make me place a bet right now, I'm probably taking New England over them next week, despite all their turnover issues. So that goes to show really what I think about Carolina. But switching gears now to the Bears-Cowboys game, this felt so good to watch. I love Caleb Williams so much. And seeing the way he absolutely did whatever he wanted to the Dallas Cowboys defense was so satisfying and so gratifying to watch, because I've had to try and defend him to, you know, all my friends and people who I talk sports with, that he is who we thought he was in college. He does still hold the ball long, and I'm not saying he's perfect, but he looked fantastic. He displayed his incredible arm. He displayed his mobility, his ability to create superhero-like plays, and it worked. Everything they did worked today. That's how you win 31-14. Everything works. Huge credit to Ben Johnson. He got in his bag. You know, the flea flicker to Luther Burden touchdown was insane. This was the perfect bounce-back game the Bears needed, and this really highlights the Dallas Cowboys defense is disgustingly garbage. There's no way around it. They have no pass rush. They need a guy like Micah Parsons. If only they paid him. Oh my goodness. I never talked about that on here because this is the first episode of the Rolskis podcast, but that was a absolute disaster. Anyone will tell you that. You never trade Micah Parsons, especially for, what was it, like 2 firsts and Kenny Rogers? No disrespect, Kenny. You're a great, he's a good player, but Micah Parsons is just a game changer. It was mind-boggling to me that they even considered ever letting him go. And not only did they let him go, they traded him to like one of their unofficial NFC rivals. Think about all the Packers-Cowboys playoff games, I should say, that you've seen. There's so many of them to date. And you're just going to hand the Packers Micah Parsons and think, yep, our playoff chances, our Super Bowl chances are so much better than they used to be now that we got Micah Parsons off our team. Thank God we did that. That was insane. And it's showing. Look, I mean, they allowed 31 points this week. They let the Giants, who just looked horrific, they let the Giants hang with them. The Giants went into overtime with this team. They put up 37. They couldn't even get, you know, felt like 37 yards of offense this week against Kansas City. They played the Eagles close, but that's also because the Eagles offense really wasn't polished yet. But it's starting to show, rear its ugly, ugly head, the type of, you know, play that we are going to be seeing from this Dallas Cowboys defense. They need to make major changes. And one more thing about this game, the Dallas Cowboys defensive coordinator is Matt Eberflus, the former head coach of the Chicago Bears. I know this win felt fantastic for Caleb Williams, showing his old head coach who's the boss here. Ben Johnson, he gets his first win as a coach against America's team. I'm very, very, very impressed with what I saw. If this is the peak of what Chicago can be, I'm very excited for their outlook going forward. Now I think it's time we switch gears. We start talking about UConn, baby. That's what a bunch of you are here for, I'm sure. The Rolskis podcast, of course. We're going to talk about UConn sports. UConn football specifically, that's the biggest fall sport on campus. And there's been a lot to talk about in terms of football, my opinion. You know, we're typically a basketball school. That's what, you know, public consensus is about us. I say, don't forget about the football. They're an incredible team. They just had their best year last year. So now let's talk about how they followed up such a great year last year. Week 1, they took care of business. You know, you play Central Connecticut, you got to route them. That's exactly what they did. They won 59-13. Then week 2 was probably their biggest test of the season and the game where they had the most to gain. It's no secret UConn's been trying to bump up their sports and get into a real conference like the ACC, and this was their chance to do it. They had Syracuse on the ropes. They should have won this game, and the fact that they didn't is agonizing. I remember sitting in my room with this game on the TV with the lead. They were winning 17-6, and just watching them slowly chip away on offense. They did nothing. They would run the ball, incomplete pass. They were just so content with chewing the clock and punting the ball away and having their defense out there just trying to chase around Syracuse, and that doesn't work forever. You can't take your foot off the gas as an offense because you're just going to keep giving the ball back to Syracuse. They got so many swings at the apple, and they just ended up getting it. They had the UConn defense tired out, and they just went on a massive run. And you could tell UConn's defense stopped playing to the level that it had been all game because they were gassed. They were out there so long because UConn's offense couldn't sustain any drives because they were scared to put the ball in the air. It was a really brutal decision. I really thought if UConn had stayed aggressive and kept trying to score, they could have won this game easily, and it would have been a massive win for the program. I was really, really excited. At halftime, I was practically doing backflips thinking we were going to win this game and, like, just keep rolling. This was probably their biggest game of the season. They could have been undefeated. They might have gotten some top 25 love. Could you imagine a UConn team ranked top 25 in the nation? That would have been insane. If they had won that Syracuse game, I seriously think they would have started getting looks, but they drop it. And then they go to Delaware, and they drop that too. Two really, really brutal losses in overtime. That's just the story of the team right now. They've lost their biggest game. They turn around, they lose another to Delaware, and you just can't have that happen. They're 2-2. They're 2 plays away from being 4-0 and being a really big surprise and a team that I think a lot of people would start to respect. But instead, you're 2-2 with wins over Central Connecticut and Ball State. I thought they looked pretty good against Ball State, no lie. I was in the crowd. I was first row watching the game. And they looked pretty solid. The run game, Cam Edwards, looked fantastic. Joe Finano, he was fine. He did his job. He's a seventh-year senior. You can't ask too much from him. But he's a polished guy. He can play the game in structure. One thing I will say, however, why do they keep trying to roll him out and keep using play action to try and get him moving? He does not throw accurate balls on the run. It just doesn't happen. I see him roll out, and I kind of think, okay, you got to pray to make this ball a completion. Because you see a time he'll duck it. It's, you know, grounded, it's too high, it's too far to the left, it's too far to the right. It feels like they throw away a play every time they have him throwing on the move. I think Simmons would like to have a quarterback that can do that, but that's just not the offense that they live in right now. Joe Finano, as your starter, he can't do that. So you either have to make a change at quarterback, which I wouldn't do. I would keep him in there. Or you have to make some play-calling adjustments. You have to keep him just in the pocket, steady, let him read the defense and fire it out. Don't have him roll out. And if you do have him roll out, have him plant his feet. Give him time in the route to have him plant his feet and deliver the throw, because that is how you're going to see the most success, so you don't end up throwing downs away just by having those plays over and over and over again. As for the outlook of this team going forward, I'm still very confident in them. I believe they can compete with every single team on their schedule. This Saturday, they go up to Buffalo. I believe that's a very winnable game for them. I think the biggest challenges they have left are obviously Boston College and Duke, two ACC teams. These are the guys you want to play with. If you want to get into a conference like that, you got to prove that you can play with these guys and win. They have to win at least one of those games against Boston College or Duke to really have the season be a success, in my opinion. They're going to make a bowl game, I imagine, because their schedule is pretty easy compared to the level of team that they are. But you need to show the fans and the people tapped into UConn football that you can beat good teams. You know, you can beat up on Central Connecticut all you want, but when it comes down to it, show me some good play against Boston College. Show me some real heart and drive against Duke. And then we can really start to have the discussion that UConn football should be more respected. Last year was a great push in the right direction. You need to follow it up this year. I think, obviously, the team knows that. Jim Mora knows that. But we need to see it. I want to see these guys, you know, go out there, and look like they can compete with anybody, or maybe not anybody, but that next level of competition. But I think that is going to do it for me. That's all I have planned on my itinerary today, so I'm going to wrap it up. Thank you all so much for listening to the first ever episode of the Roll Skis Sports Podcast. It means a lot. We're trying to get this thing off the ground. I'm super excited to see how this does, and I will catch you guys next week. As always, roll skis.